Hey, what's up, Toby? We made it another week. Process that podcast.
Episode 400. Wait, we're not counting anymore.
No, we're not.
We're 400. No. We're over 40, so that's good.
We're getting a lot closer every day.
We are.
Today, we're talking about something that I picked up on Instagram, which is the source of all truth.
Yes, sir.
I say that in full sarcasm. And yet, it was actually a video of Steve Jobs talking about what he did when he set up the Apple One. So he said,
"What?
When I was in my garage, I was boarding the Apple One," and he said he knew the exact cost of every single Apple One that went out.
Because he was out physically collecting the pieces of hardware to put in
products.
Yeah.
So it's super easy.
It says.
Yep. Super easy. So then he is successful. He moves on to, fun fact, he sold those to my dad's cousin. My dad's cousin was the first. He had a $25,000 check to Steve Jobs for their Apple Ones to sell at the bite shops in the Bay Area.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Small world, man. It's totally small world. Anyway.
Yeah. Love that.
But he talked about moving to he got big, like his business grew, right? And as businesses grow, processes are more difficult. And he found out, just from an accounting standpoint, he found out how they managed the cost of the Apple IIs. And he's like, guess how they did it? They're like, well, we think we're this much. And then every quarter we do a true up. And so Steve Jobs, in his classic curious form, like, but why? Why do we do this? Like, we didn't do this when we were in the garage.
Yeah.
When we were making the Apple Ones, that was not a... However, it is when they started making the Apple II. And so what he talked about is basically they just didn't have the processes in place to capture those costs. And so he built those processes in when they went to their next version. I don't know if it was the Apple III or the Macintosh. But it's a really good story around processes.
Well, that idea that I think all of us have been in that infancy phase where we have to understand how all the parts come together.
Yeah.
Right. And so we're super intimate with all the details.
Yeah.
And then God forbid that we're successful. You know, the dog chases the car and catches the bumper. It never happens. But when it does, you know what? And so, we find ourselves in a new world of process.
Yep. The interesting thing that I kind of pulled from this is like you have bureaucratic process.
Okay.
And then, you know, which is the over-engineered, this is how we do it. You have no real answer to why. It's just because all big companies do it this way. You're like, well,
yeah,
no, like but why do they do it? And then you have enabling process, which he had when he was in his, which he had when he was in his garage building the Apple Ones.
Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit, because those are two, you know, kind of polar opposites of the spectrum from a process that doesn't serve anybody, but it's just been forced on us.
Yeah.
You know, public education graduates know what that looks like to get a degree or, you know, navigating the DMV just to get your annual license. Jump on one foot. But I don't know that people are as familiar or might recognize when they're operating in an enabling process. We know what the suffering looks like, but enabling processes sometimes are so smooth, we don't realize that it's by design.
There are no memes for enabling process.
If you just experienced something for which you've never seen a meme on Instagram, that is the definition. That's a good working definition, Chris.
I believe you just run past it.
Yeah.
Because we are so flexible as humans to be able to do all sorts of things, live in all sorts of experience, like have social tribes, play politics at work, do all the things.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't think, oh man, that's just brilliant.
Yeah.
That process just makes my life easier.
It's kind of like water is wet, and to a fish, the answer is, and, you know, well, it's, That is super interesting. I think, you know, in the spirit of process debt, you know, we see a bureaucratic process and we think, oh God, there's so many things I want to do to deconstruct.
Sure. Sure.
But conversely, we could take a more appreciative approach and say, you know, what are the characteristics of a healthy enabling process that we might try to embrace or model? And so any certain characteristics that jump out at you?
I was thinking of a colleague that I've had in my past. When I first met him, he just bugged me. And he bugged me because he had a ton of documentation.
Yeah.
He said no all the time. He gave me ways to self-serve myself and solve my own problems.
God, the nerve of this guy. Social creature, that's hard.
Yeah, it bugged me a lot. And then I realized, oh, he just runs a really tight ship.
Yeah.
Maybe the tightest ship, you know, with this company that I worked for. And I think that that's the interesting thing. It's like, look, you're going to have bureaucratic process when you just don't have boundaries.
Now, that's an interesting. Yeah.
Like, think about how often just stuff changes. Well, what are we doing this quarter? We have to go and fill out the new PowerPoint. Great. Love it. It's my favorite.
Right.
Okay, we're in the Gen AI phase. I want some company to create basically all they are is they are a marketing / QBR / monthly report company. And all you have to do is if you're a manager or an executive, you go in and you write the questions that you ask, maybe ask for updated images or something. And you have to ask that every time. And then you just have AI create or human, doesn't really matter, create the deck and make it the same every single time.
You mean the AI called intern?
Called marketing department.
That's right. No, but you make a really good point. Like the this individual, when boundaries are clear and when scope is well known, it's easy to say, I'll take it to the edge of my scope and I'll prepare it for you to pick it up where I leave off.
Yep.
I think that's super interesting.
The other thing is I think bureaucratic process are fear-based, whereas empowering or enabling processes are often communal.
More collaborative.
Yeah, it's just how do we make everybody's life better? What do we fix upstream? What do we fix downstream? Whereas a lot of bureaucratic things is like, well, why are we doing this? And you're like, well, back in the 1900s, we missed something in our software deploy or whatever.
Yeah.
Ever since then, we've been doing this extra thing and everybody, and you know, all the new people are like, well, why do you do that? Do that thing at my old company. And they're like, we just do the thing. And so, you know, it's the meatloaf, you know, you cut off the ends of the meatloaf or cut off the ends of the steak and it's because the pan mall, it's not saying stuff, but like, I don't think we realize how much we just run past things by just because we're social. Like we want you to do a thing in a meeting, do a presentation or talk about something.
Okay.
And talk. But I don't know, like, who are we talking for? Like, what's the outcome? Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrapped around actually. But.
I think that idea, that kind of speaks to purpose, right? Whether it's the social creature, and if it's to try to herd people to an outcome, I'm picturing, that example made me think about like the TSA. I might be the only guy flying that hour and they still want me to serpentine through like 400 yards of switchbacks. And yet the one time where in an idle moment, somebody went through and they just opened up one entire alley so I could just walk straight up.
Yeah.
I was overjoyed. And it was such a small thing, but it was a focus not on the process they were trying to control, but just recognizing there's not a blessed soul in this entire airport right now. So if somebody's running late, why don't we just let them walk directly to the check-in?
Just let them go.
And so I think that we've been talking around this idea of a little bit of, is it about the control or is it about the people trying to navigate, you know, the problem a little bit. So, but the variability, I love that call out. And with humans, we are wildly variable creatures. And so, yeah, if what we have is wide variability and no boundaries, then the process has to invariably get more rigid.
Well, it's interesting, right? So I recently am doing some work on the house. I'm not doing work. I'm having people doing work on the house, but I'm just thinking about what if they ran their work day, like my knowledge work day?
Okay. Say more about that. How would you imagine looking?
Have a meeting.
Yeah.
Without a clear blueprint, right? Or without the right tools in the tool shed.
Yeah.
Or without the right screws that need to be used. And then have another meeting.
Yeah.
And then talk about something, like talk about the color.
Really?
Talk about lights. Talk about paint shades.
Talk about screws again. Let's go back and talk about screws again.
Should they be galvanized screws or are we a half inch or 1.5 inch? What are we doing?
So you're suggesting these guys might be wildly more effective if they operated like knowledge workers.
Well, I'm just saying what's interesting is that there's a problem, right? Here's what's happened. So there's been a couple problems that I've caused because I'm like, hey, it'd be nice to have an outlet here. Let's put an outlet in, right?
Yeah.
And so the guy is like, great, I'm going to charge you more money. Perfect. Wonderful. Love it.
Yeah.
I'm really happy to have an outlet where I want it. And then there's been a couple other times where he's like, ooh, yeah, you see the board? It's not OSB. It's not OSB. It's this black sponge board thing. They're like, yeah, that's going to cost you. Oh, by the way, you know, but like everything is a decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the meetings that I have are ad hoc. They're scrum-ish in that, hey, here's the problem. You have a decision to make. What do you want to do? And I'm the decision maker. And so you have less meetings because the outcome is clear because I signed up for something.
Yeah.
The changes are clear because I either asked for them or we discover something. But if you think about a typical day as a knowledge worker, and it is like, it's like whack-a-mole education, whack-a-mole, who's making the decision. It's who's on first.
Yeah. Chris, that's so interesting because you're right. And I've touched on this in the past. I've had an unusual opportunity as a knowledge worker to be involved in some pretty major construction projects for a client.
Yeah.
And to watch the way the site runs, much like at your house, these tradespersons have spent years developing master within their unique domain. The plumber doesn't go over to the electrician and tell him to put shit in, you know, and they certainly don't consult the roofer if they have drainage issues. Like they know that there's a person to go to, and that's the person whose domain it is to be very expert. In the knowledge space, though, we don't always respect that people have all this inherent process that they've cultivated and that they gathered to be able to navigate so many of these situations. So you're right. The corporate world talks endlessly about galvanized versus non-galvanized screws, and the trades world just gets it done. And which project?
It's interesting because I think some of it is like our knowledge work is so complex. And so it's not a simple A plus B. Like software is the hardest thing to do in the world. Now, Gen AI is going to help make good programmers good and probably make bad programmers worse, maybe. But the interesting thing is like, it's hard to know what the definition of done is because you're telling people, how do you do this process?
Yeah.
And even if it's as simple as how do I make my coffee in the morning, people just literally can't explain it.
Interesting.
And so it ends up being very interesting because oftentimes when you say, look, why are you doing this? They'll tell you, well, this is what I do. And you're like, I appreciate that. Love the fact that you've told me what you're doing, but why do you do it? And I think this comes back to that enabling process when there's a strong why, then the process takes care of itself.
Yeah.
It's but if there's not a, yeah, if there's not a strong why or there's fear,
yeah,
it becomes a lot of CYA.
I love that. Yeah. If the focus of the process is about getting to an outcome.
Yeah.
Build me an awesome deck that I can enjoy this fall.
Yep.
That feels very enabling. You know exactly what questions need to get answered. Yep. You know what done looks like.
Yep.
Right. But if it's build me mystery software or, you know, prepare my coffee the way that only I like, but I'm not going to tell you, then we're forced to get into all these unnecessary gyrations.
Yeah. The other thing is that, like, I don't cross lines, right? On my own project, like the guy that I hired, he's the one that calls me.
Yeah.
He's not the one that's on the on site all the time.
Yep.
He's like, I know that if there's something that happened, so like even tonight, a guy put one of my lights up on the wrong outlet.
Gotcha.
And so I'm going to go tell the guy on the site, say, hey, look, that's on the wrong one. You need to go and put it on the other outlet. And it's not like, I naturally know that I don't need to call the guy that I hired to say, oh man, your guy, I told you over the phone that I wasn't home. I explained exactly what my lights did. And you know what they did? They went and put up the wrong light on the wrong outlet. Then I need you to fix it. Like, but that's kind of what we do at work sometimes.
It totally is. That's a good example. And all this time talking and whining and just saying, unscrew it and put it in on the other outlet 3 feet over.
Yeah. And you know what? My builder doesn't care.
I bet.
That I talked to the guy and said, you can solve your own problem by moving it from X to Y, and I'm good.
Chris, I love that. That's very outcome mindset.
Yeah.
Instead of getting all about the inputs and the procedures, it's just the outcome I want.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's interesting, and we can kind of end it here, is like people love RACI metrics. They love them. Yeah. They are so great.
Yeah. Responsible, accountable, consulted, informed, and nobody...
Yep. They love them. They look so good on a PowerPoint.
Oh, heck yeah.
Are they defined? Do they work? Do they make executives happy? Oh, hell yeah.
And then in practice. Oh,
but do you have a choice to say, hey, am I consultant? Like, do I know what I'm responsible for? Or is that nebulous? Oftentimes it's really super, nebulous.
Super unclear. Yeah.
Because again, there's a misunderstanding of who did I buy this thing from? Who's the builder?
Yeah.
And who are the worker? And there's a lot of meetings and communication around clearing that up, regardless of whether you have RACI or not.
I love that, Chris. Today, good conversation. I think, when we're small and have our fingers all over everything and we just need the outcomes, we design processes to be nimble and then left unchecked, they become something unto themselves with no purpose.
Yeah. And I think practically just have some boundaries.
Yeah.
That's not my decision to make. Someone else above me needs to make that. I can make that call. This is why I'm making that call.
Yeah. I love it.
Because that's because I think we just know. I just think we don't think about what our scope or span of control is versus our span of influence. And if we just stayed in our lanes, we'd probably be a lot happier at work. Although if you do find a meme about enabling process, send it over, man.
Hey, Brad. Sounds good. Thanks.
Sorry.
All right,
bye.